All right. Hello, everybody. I am Jeremy. I'm a husband, a father, a son, and a friend. And this is my oral history. Thanks for tuning in after hearing that little teaser last week on International Podcast Day. Here I am with episode one of My Oral History. And what I want to do today is really just introduce what the idea is behind this particular show. It's kind of a time machine into my brain. And it's related to pop music and rock music and the stuff I grew up with. And it's really for my kids. But before we enter that time machine, I want to do this introduction for the few of you that are probably listening. And I would hope that at least the four listeners that I have in the future are my kids. I have four kids, two boys and two girls, and I'm recording that with them in mind. Now, first of all, I have to get this out of the way. I am not dying. Now, I'm a big fan of films, and I'll reference them almost as much as I do music, but this is not my version of that My Life movie starring Michael Keaton from way back in the day. I know, besides a lot of extra weight and the aches and pains that come with it, I am relatively healthy, as far as I know, and I hope to live a long life. Long enough to at least see my kids all get married, have children, homes of their own, and all that other stuff. But I'm not recording this as some sort of last will and testament. it's really not something for them to pore over after I'm gone. It's more for when they are ready to hear where I have been and to join me as I kind of go through the keys to unlocking the few memories that I have kind of stored away in that lockbox of my brain. I don't have a lot of memories from when I was younger, from probably about 15 years old on. They're kind of repressed, and I don't know if that's completely normal, but due to reasons I'm sure that I'm going to discuss at some point in this show, I have repressed a number of things about my upbringing. And to be honest, I'm not sure what normal would be in that regard, so I don't know if it's normal to forget stuff, or if it's just a way of protecting myself from myself, if that makes any sense at all. There's one way I can unlock my memories, and that's music, and that's pop music, and that's because it seems to have this power or hold over me to transport me to times when I was younger. Now, one measure of a song can be like a DeLorean, and that's another movie reference. There you go, if you're keeping count, a DeLorean that transports me back to the past. And as you join me in the passenger seat, be mindful that these aren't necessarily songs I endorse in content, but they're songs that hold power regardless of that. And now I'm sure as we go along together, things might change. They might change with the next chapter. I don't know. I'm kind of just flying by the seat of my pants. But I've begun. I've loaded up the Mr. Fusion with garbage from the curb. And where we're going, we don't need roads. Yeah, all right. I'll probably reference Back to the Future a lot. And given that it's, you know, the year that Marty travels forward in time to see his kids, I figured it's appropriate to start now, right? So why? That's the question that I intend to answer in this chapter. Why am I doing this? Is there a master plan? I'll try to explain. Now, a few years ago, I've been an adult student longer than I was a student when I was younger in college. And I took a class, which was called, you know, this very heady title, Arts and Expression Writing, or whatever. Arts and Expression Writing. I really just thought that it was a creative writing class, and I was sure I'd ace that, so I took it, and I couldn't have been further off. Instead, really, the primary focus of this class ended up being on the power of storytelling, and one particular section was devoted to the relationship between memories and the stories that we tell. I've mentioned my repressed memory problem just a few minutes ago, and this whole idea of the relationship between memories and stories kind of hit me hard, you know? But I journeyed on, and I actually did well in the class. I got an A. And I'm glad I did, because that's why I'm sitting here. I'm sitting here because I actually really enjoyed the class, even though I had this really heady title, you know? So one essay we had to read. We had to read a lot of weird stuff, mostly essays. And one essay was written by a guy, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of his name. His name was Gilbert Mylander, or Milliander. I don't know. If you know and you're listening and you're an English guy and you want to correct me, please just let me know. Or gal. I'm sorry. English guy or gal. You want to let me know if I'm doing it wrong. But Gilbert Mylander, and he wrote an essay that's called Why I Remember. And I'm going to write I wrote an essay about this. So I'm going to just quote myself, which is really meta and really kind of snooty, but I can't really put back into words or better rephrase it than I already did. So I'm going to read this, and I apologize in advance for if it sounds really snooty. Okay, so I apologize. This is a summary of his thesis, first of all. Mylander begins his argument by discussing the difference between explicit and implicit memory. Implicit memory is mechanical in nature, remembering a skill long after learning it, like riding a bike. Now, implicit memory doesn't require the attention to detail that explicit memory would. For instance, one can remember riding a bike once learning how to do it. I actually kind of went off quote. I apologize that. But it's explicit memory that would help them track how far they rode or where they have been so far on their ride. Now, it's in the annals of explicit memory where events both healthy and traumatic reside. Mylander concedes to the appeal of eliminating or limiting the long-term retention of traumatic memories, but he does not go so far as to endorse doing so. It'd be a necessary step to prescribe beta blockers or anti-anxiety medication to people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder rather than let them live with the traumatic event at the forefront of their mind. However, it is not entirely in our best interest to eliminate awful memories completely. To emphasize his point, Mylander references an example from a Sherlock Holmes novel wherein Holmes equates the human mind with the attic of a home. In this attic, one can choose to store everything from the important to the mundane to the point of clutter and confusion. Now, it was Holmes' decision to eliminate the mundane from his mind in order to make room for the important. I suffered a lot of trauma growing up, and it's going to be hard to share that stuff, but it's necessary. I'm not going to get into the gritty details. I can't. But further in my essay, I discussed the necessity of remembering the bad in order to avoid repeating the same mistakes. I'm not sure if I agree with that completely now. I mean, it's been a couple of years, but when you focus on something so much, you often become what you hate the most. So I'm really not going to focus on the bad, but I will mention it. And I just won't let it become my primary plot device. So my primary goal of this is not to throw people under the bus or to share all the bad stuff or any of that. But I will mention it here and there when I feel the need. Now back to my essay, which I promise this will not be the usual for this podcast. I'm just trying to lay the groundwork to build this on, so the people who listen in the future will know exactly what I'm doing with a show called My Oral History. To further compound the idea of the importance of memories to our human condition, I turn to noted 20th century theologian and author Friedrich Buechner. Friedrich Buechner. I probably butchered his name too. In his book, Telling the Truth, The Gospel is Tragedy, Comedy, and Fairy Tale, Buechner uses his faith as the foundation for the argument that our lives are a story being told by a divine author. It's memories that form our character. And in his summary, Buechner writes, "There is a fragrance in the air, a certain passage of a song, an old photograph falling from the pages of a book, the sound of somebody's voice in the hall that makes your heart leap and fills your eyes with tears. Who can say when or how it will be that something easters up out of the dimness to remind us of a time before we were born and after we will die?" Much like how trauma victims can associate other sensory input with a moment of impact, a smell, a visual marker, a sound, any other memory can be associated with other sensory input. And I would like to offer a couple examples from my own life that would seem to confirm this idea. My grandfather. Now, he was a profound influence on my life. In fact, I'm staring at a picture of him on my desk right now. My mother was limited in her mental capacity, so she and I, along with my younger siblings, were kind of forced to live with him during the formative stages of my childhood. My grandfather was also a heavy smoker. Cigarettes. Pipes. Now, I'm not a smoker myself, but there have been moments in my life where I've found myself confronted with the smell of Black Cherry Paladin brand tobacco. It's a sweet smell, almost as powerful as the smell of cough syrup. But it's a conduit to my memory. Smelling that tobacco instantly transferred me to times as a child where I would be seated in his lap, his unlit pipe in his mouth, his plastic tobacco pouch in his breast pocket, the smell of the cherry flavor wafting from it. Now, I'm going to get to the linchpin of this podcast, and this is another quote from the essay. I have always been a fan of music from a young age until now, and music is another sensory key to my memory. It's Beaker's point that these memories are important to our overall story. And to have triggers that send us on our journey to the past is almost divine in nature. And finally, let him preach this overwhelming of tragedy by comedy, of darkness by light, of the ordinary by the extraordinary, as the tale that is too good not to be true, because to dismiss it as untrue is to dismiss it along with that catch of breath, that beat and lifting of the heart, near to or even accompanied by tears, which I believe is the deepest intuition of truth that we have. That was from Beekner as well. Memories are the key to divine truth, and their associations with our story, the greater story being told by an all-knowing author, and can only be fully realized from the other side, as Archibald MacLeish writes, by and by. Mylander, by quoting both St. Augustine and MacLeish, hedges his bets by concluding that neither of these readings supposes that simply erasing the painful past takes seriously the narrative quality of human life. To erase the past is to erase our own narrative, and with it, our ability to connect with our fellow man. I am a man of faith and convictions, so it's not difficult for me to believe that there is a larger story at stake when regarding my own memories. The good, the bad, the mundane, the painful have all been important elements in my growth as a person, and the growth of my faith. In thinking of this, I'm reminded of another Beekner quote. Coincidences are God's way of getting our attention. It's hard to not deny when you see the connected nature of the human condition that there is something larger on the line than can be seen in the present. Much like the old analogy about life being a parade, and we're all marching in it. We can't see the beginning, we can't see the end, but we know that they're there, and we know that in order to reach the end, we have to stay the course. We know that bad things will happen in our lives, but we have to choose to use that as fuel for our journey, not as insurmountable obstacles. And it only makes sense to celebrate conquering an obstacle than forgetting that it even existed. So, it's with that, that is the purpose of this podcast. I'm treating my memories as fuel for my journey in the future. They're not obstacles to get over. I do have to add a caveat before I go any further. This is the world as I remember it. The world as I remember it. I'm not going to stretch the truth. I'm not going to lie. But I might remember things wrong. Details and things like that may not be 100% correct. So don't fault me for that. Names will be changed to protect the innocent. And also to protect me from, you know, lawsuits. Yeah. So anyway, I may be off by a fraction. Just remember, I'm a human being. I'm flawed. I'm not perfect. If you ask me that, I will admit to it. And my second person to tell you will be my wife. I am not perfect. And my memory is far from perfect. But as you sit in the passenger seat of this DeLorean with me, feel free to send me some feedback. I would love to hear from you at myoralhistory@gmail.com. That's myoralhistory@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you whether you think this is a bad idea or stupid or if you enjoy it. I will also post in the notes for this show some of my sources, a link to the article by Melander, a link to buy the book Telling the Truth by Friedrich Buechner, which is one of my favorite books of all time, and also a link to the song that I really only discovered a few years ago, even though it's been around for a long time, and it's not necessarily a key to my past, but it's an important part. It's an important way of telling what I'm doing, and it's by a band called Story of My Life. You can find it on iTunes, Amazon, and all of your favorite music purchasing sources. Just please support the artists I feature on this podcast with your dollar. If you like what you hear, go buy it. That's all I ask. Go buy it. It's $1.29 at iTunes, and it's well worth it. The whole album is actually really good. I think it's like $8. But anyway, it's a song called Story of My Life by Social Distortion. And I'm going to see if this works. And here we go.